Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Ernestine from AAEEH.
So, can you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your disabilities work?
So, my name is Ernestine Gomilha. I am French and Cameroonian, and I have studied in France and in Cameroon, and I have begun advocating for rights for people with disabilities since 1998. I founded an organization, Association d'aide à l'éducation de l'enfant handicapé, and then I have been involved with organization of persons with disabilities because I have mobility problem, and then I have also involved with women and feminist movement with the issue of disability as a cross-cutting issue. I have also been involved in research because I have a graduate in educational sciences. I have a PhD in educational sciences, and I am working on education policies, notably inclusive education, taking account of disabled children in learning settings and the question about teachers. Also, I have worked with internal cooperation organization, and I did missions, I did assignments with UNESCO, for example, and now I am working on my research papers and books I want to publish. So, I don't know if I have told you, you have an idea of who I am, or you have another question.
Absolutely. So, in education for persons with disabilities, what are some of the key issues that you found in your research?
Concerning education of persons with disabilities, there are issues, it depends of context, there are issues on access to education, participation in the education system, and qualification in order to access to labor market. In some countries where I used to do my researches, there are stigma regarding persons with disabilities, and it is difficult and opportunity cost because of low economic income, families used to don't see the need to send a child with disability in school. And once in school, sometimes it seems like there is unpreparedness of taking in account needs of children with disabilities. I'm talking about countries like in South Africa. And then some children with, for example, hard hearing impairment are not very well enrolled in schools, and then there are less continuing or less achieving a grade or a grade of school. So that is what I have observed. And in the other hand, parents are not supported to send their children to school. There is no provision. There is lack of accessibility in schools, and the teacher are not well prepared to teach children with some kind of disability.
So, how do we, as a society, get around these barriers? How can teachers and educators the world over kind of take into account the needs of persons with disabilities? How can we be more supportive?
Teachers need to have in their curricula during their learning or their training, they need to have some modules on how to accept or to how to deal with a child with various disability. And teachers need also to work, or the education system needs also to work closely with families or parents and organizations of persons with disabilities to know or to be aware what are the barriers, how to encounter barriers, and how to deal with some disabilities.
So, in your work and your research, has there been any success that you've seen that you'd like to share?
I have recently published, I can say, a key study on inclusive education policy in France and in Cameroon, with the regards of with the according to the viewpoints of teachers. And during the Generation Equality Forum, you know, the big forum we were held in Paris and Mexico, and it was in regard with Beijing Plus 25, autonomy of women. And during that forum, I have published a document for advocacy titled "Why Bring the Voices of Girls with Disability to the Generation Equality Forum." It was a sort of awareness regarding girls with disability and the need to have their voices in the table of discussion or the next agenda, feminist agenda.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
In this segment of our show, Joan Joyce will be telling us a little bit about the sled sharks.
So if you can introduce yourself to the audience and tell me a little bit about the sled sharks, that'd be great.
Okay, I'm Joan Joyce. I'm the Director of Therapeutic Recreation and Community Outreach at MedStar National Rehab Hospital in Washington, D.C. As part of my job as a recreation therapist, we've developed a large adapted sports program, and the D.C. Sled Sharks is the sled hockey team that we have as part of our program, and I helped get it started, and I manage that program.
So, for the team itself, do they use any modified equipment or techniques in the game?
Yes, so sled hockey, they play it in a sled. That's, you actually are in a bucket with a metal in front of it. And underneath the sled, there are two blades, like ice skating blades. So they get into the bucket, they strap in, there's straps on their legs and then on their waist part. And then they also have two hockey sticks. They're small ones. I'd say they're probably a little longer than your arm. And on one side of it, there are picks that go into the ice. And then on the other side of it is like a normal hockey stick. There's the, looks like a miniature hockey stick. So they skate with the picks, and then they slide their hand down to where the picks are, and then they use the other side to hit the puck.
So what are some of the key benefits that a player with a disability might enjoy as part of a rehab program?
So for us, our mission is to ensure that people can have healthy lifestyles. So being involved, even for able-bodied, for all of us, being involved in physical activities are good. A lot of times for people with a physical disability, their options are more limited. So I think what I love about all of our adapted sports is that they get to be like everybody else. They get to, they're exercising, they're healthier, but then also the fun of competition. I mean, a lot of them, they say the most fun is zooming down the ice or hitting, you know, going off the wall and, you know, feeling that same drive that all of us want when we compete. I remember one time one of the players who was in high school, he said to me, after the next practice, when he came back, he said, you know, when I was leaving the rink the other day, I saw somebody from my high school, and they said, what are you doing here? And he says, I play hockey. And the guy was shocked, like, how do you play hockey? So he got to, and here the boy he was talking to also played hockey, but played stand-up hockey. So they were able to compare and talk, and he came and saw his game. And so gives them that common denominator with other kids, I think.
So I'd imagine there's this sense of freedom when they're out on the ice, just being part of a team and just kind of living in the moment. For someone with...
Yes, I agree. Sorry.
Oh, quite all right. So, you were about to say there?
Yes, yeah. I think on the ice, many of them talk about it's the fastest they could go. When we first get out on the ice, you know, we do laps around, and as they get better and as they're older, they're just zipping around and they just love it. And I mean, it's so funny because they also sort of like crash it into each other, but it's like that free movement of, you know, you're not in a wheelchair. It's getting out of the wheelchair and having that. And like another sport we have is a wheelchair rugby, and it's the crashing and the smashing into somebody. I mean, it's really fun to watch people light up when they can do things they didn't think they were going to be able to do.
So that story you mentioned earlier brings to mind the question, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning disability athletics in your work?
Well, I think one thing I've heard from our athletes, and this is probably more from the adult athletes that we have versus the younger ones, is they don't want to be seen as heroes or, oh, you're, you know, wow, you, they don't want to be pitied. Instead, it's like, yeah, this thing happened to me, but look, what I, you know, like, for example, at the hospital, I work on the spinal cord unit. So some of the players who are on our different teams, I remember when they were first injured. And they, you know, they'll say, look, since then I finished school, I got my degree, I got married, I have kids. So I think a lot of times people don't assume that people with physical disability are going to have normal lives. They do. They just have them a little bit different than what we have. And many of them, when they say, would you go back, would you, you know, change your life and be back to where it didn't happen? And they're like, no, because look at everything I've done. You know, look at everything I've accomplished since then. And you know, that my life is different because of it.
There is that change in perspective. Sometimes an experience like that can really change your focus of the world from being sort of a narrower place to one where you see different types of people, different ability levels, and basically the creativity of the human mind in creating adaptations for sport and just day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think, you know, like, you know, some people talk about that, you know, especially if they make it up on a higher level, they're like, you know, like our wheelchair basketball team is like number three in the country in Division One, and some of these guys are from D.C., had never been in a plane, and so now they're traveling. Like this weekend, they all flew to Phoenix for a tournament that's happening there, and they're like, you know, this is something I don't think I would have done before this. You know, it may have been, you know, from an underprivileged area in D.C. and flying to Phoenix for basketball was not going to be part of their repertoire. So it's not something anybody ever wishes for, but there are some things that you do afterwards, I think, that are equally as good as your life could have been.
So in your time working with the players, is there any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, I think on an every sort of person level, it's when they first get into a sports chair or a sled and you see their eyes light up as they are sort of freed from that everyday wheelchair. But we have had different athletes who have qualified higher up. Recently, one of our sled hockey players, and he was very young when he started with us, and he now made the Paralympic the national team. So he's going to Beijing in after the, you know, when the Paralympics are, I think at the end of February. And he's so excited, and to see the excitement in his family and him and even his sister, I mean, it's just like, it's such a, you know, amazing moment. And to know that it all started with him, come, you know, he met one of our players at school, and he told him about our team, and he came out to try it. And here he, you know, went that far. But equally exciting for me is when our players, you know, and I almost think that by being on our teams, they interact more with other people with physical disabilities. So sometimes they may be the only one in their school in a wheelchair, so they sort of think, oh, you know, I can't do anything. And then they come and they're at tournaments. Like we, with our sled hockey team, we traveled each year to nationals. USA Hockey puts on a disabled hockey festival every year, and all the teams, all the sled hockey junior teams and adult teams come together for a weekend, and they just have, and for them to see everything that everybody else is doing. You know, what's a really good example is one of our players was having to have part of his leg amputated. It was a procedure that was being done. And I was like, wow, you know, you're only 16. This must be hard to handle. And he says, you know, John, last year I went to the select sled hockey camp. Almost all those players were amputees. I saw them. They've gone on in life, they're married, they were, you know, some are soldiers, some were other things. And he said, yeah, and so his experience as being in sled hockey prepared him for something that would just be really hard, devastating for any of us to deal with, but it gave him that extra, you know, to help him with it, which was very cool, I thought.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, will do.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making cocktails. Maybe you're packing bowls. Even while we're distancing, it's important to remember, alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks could save a life. And we could do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Ernestine Nomela told us a little bit about AAEEH. And we heard a little bit about the Sled Sharks from Joan Joyce. In this segment of our show, Neil Blage will be giving us an update on the work of BCANS. So what's the latest with BCANS?
Hi, Cam. Lots of stuff going on here. And before I begin, I just want to acknowledge that I'm on the traditional territories of the Esquimalt and Songhees people here on Vancouver Island. So it's been busy here, Cam. We are just in the midst of working with our support for Indigenous Students Learning Program. So we're providing almost $2.5 million worth of technology to Indigenous students across Canada, Indigenous students of limited financial means, to help them with their education, their studies, and hopefully their future career path. So that's one thing that we're doing right now. We're also starting work on looking at development of standards and regulations for the Accessible Canada Act as it relates to First Nations communities across Canada. So we're working with communities across Canada to look at two areas primarily, and that's the built environment and policies that communities operate in. And, you know, just all the other stuff going on, where right now we're considering whether or not we'll be holding our national gathering. We've postponed that for 2 years, but we have it scheduled now for November of this year here in Victoria. But we're still uncertain about, you know, with the state of COVID in the world, if that's going to happen or what we're going to do as we move forward.
So in terms of the policies you're looking at for Accessible Canada, what are some of the key considerations for Aboriginal peoples with disabilities?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll look at all the policies there. We'll identify some of the barriers and specifically we'll note the lack of a disability lens, which we already know that many of them don't have. And we'll be looking at both the policies that are front-facing to communities, that communities have to operate under, but also those policies that govern the operations and conduct of what can and cannot happen by, you know, through federal government employees, because there's two tiers of policies there. So, well, you know, how are, for example, housing policies within a community, you know, as the community develops them, but also as how the funding envelope may to be rolled out from Indigenous Services Canada, you know, is it ensuring that houses are visitable? You know, when they build new developments, are they ensuring that there's sidewalks there with sidewalk cuts in them? You know, when they're building new facilities, band offices or health centers, you know, are they ensuring that they're totally accessible with automatic doors and zero-step entry, that type of thing? We look at those things for the physical environment, what the policies say, you know, about what to build and how you build and how you build infrastructure, but then also the programs and services, right? Are they designed and delivered in a manner that's, you know, available to persons living with disabilities, regardless of what that disability might be. So those type of things, and make sure that disability is noted, and that you know, the standards and regulations can address those things.
So I'm guessing that for the review, it would include people of various types of disabilities to discuss the implications of what works and what doesn't, what's practical, what isn't. I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all proposition.
Well, exactly. As we all know, disability is very diverse. You know, there's, you know, physical disabilities, you know, persons from the deaf community, the blind community, there's episodic, there's invisible disabilities. And, you know, depending on who you are, you face different barriers, right? And we have to be as inclusive as possible. You know, so part of the work will be not only engaging with community leadership, but their members living with a disability to tell us, you know, what are the barriers they're facing? How are policies affecting their lives and their ability or inability to be totally included members of their community, right?
So what's the ideal outcome? If you could see anything added for persons with disabilities, both in the Aboriginal community and not under Accessible Canada, what would you most like to see?
What I would most like to see, I'd like to see, you know, in Canada we have over 630 First Nations communities. I would say that, unfortunately, too many are not accessible physically, right? So, I mean, that would be one thing as we go forward to make sure that all communities are physically accessible for elders, for young parents, for persons living with a disability. You should be able to participate and be involved in your community, right? So it's not good enough just to have one building that might be accessible if you can't get to that building because you don't have paved roads or sidewalks and you use, assisted device or whatever the case may be. We have to make sure that programs are designed as well and how they're delivered to accommodate persons with disabilities, again, right? Understanding their specific needs and how those programs are delivered, right? So I'd like to see more of an inclusive approach taken. Like we looked in the last budget that came down, when we looked specifically at the Northern, I think they called it Northern Development or Indigenous Northern Development or something like that. If you look in the budget, it was replete with the term disability. But when you got down to the Indigenous portion of it, the First Nations side, it skipped right over that section. Disability wasn't mentioned once. Indigenous disability hasn't always been a priority by government, and sometimes not in the communities as well, because of all the other competing priorities that are there. You know, issues related to poverty, housing, transportation, all those things that we know about. So in my ideal world is over the next, I mean, Canada has said they want to be totally inclusive by 2040 under the Accessible Canada Act. That's a long time to wait when you're a person living with a disability and you can't necessarily be a totally included member of your community. So I'd like to see some more attention given now. Right now, First Nations are excluded from the legislation for, I think, another 4 years. So during that time, yeah, I'm hoping that the barriers that are identified can be addressed, or at least plans are placed, put in place to address them, so that, you know, all First Nations communities across Canada are as accessible as possible, physically and within policies that communities and members are forced to operate in.
So are there any steps that we as a society can take to move in the direction of inclusivity? Over the next 4 years, probably be helpful if people had actually taken this to heart and sort of moved in that direction.
Well, Cam, you know, I meet with government entities all the time, meeting with community, and I think as a disability community, at times we mesh well together, at times we don't. I think the biggest problem that we see here in Canada is that people who are not necessarily, you know, impacted by disability, where they don't believe they are, don't really see it as a priority. And people tend to wait until they know somebody with a disability or they have a child with a disability. 80% of us will live with a disability in Canada, you know, during our lifetime. And 22%, as you know, of the population and higher live with a disability. But yet there still is that lack of priority. I think people sometimes think, well, it's not, you know, what I do, and it's not really my problem. We need, if we're going to be an inclusive country by 2040 for all persons, including persons living with disabilities, then we need buy-in from the outside world, right? Other sectors that aren't traditionally associated with disability and the disability movement. People need to understand that disability affects us all, and we all have a stake in this game, and we need that buy-in. And I don't think governments have really done a good job in promoting disability awareness or you know, in our case, anti-Indigenous racism and disability. And it's sort of, like I said, it's sort of a non-priority area, except within the disability community. And that's going to change. It's got to change by governments, and it's got to change by the general public of Canada, you know, to be more supportive and give their support and help us advocate for change. You know,
right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thanks, Cam.
Of course. My friends, as you well know, accessibility is not a one-size-fits-all proposition. If we're not including Aboriginal voices, women's voices, those groups in society who have something to contribute that intersect with disability life, we're not really doing our jobs, are we? Or if accessibility is not for all, it is not complete. Our people are very best. This has been HandyLink.
I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.